The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Well, we haven't quite got the sample size we need yet, but already alarm bells are starting to ring at several AFL clubs, particularly those sitting 0 and 3. So many issues to dissect as we slide into round 4 of the AFL season, but legally, of course. Hello and welcome to the Fox Footy Podcast, where we'll be joined a little later on by legendary Hawthorn goal kicker Jason Dunstall. But for the moment, Ben Waterworth alongside a slightly altered crew for this week's episode.
Slightly improved crew.
Firstly, speaking of sliding, the DM specialist himself, Tom Morris.
Not bad from you, Ben. I do enjoy sliding into Sarah's DMs whenever she posts a good Instagram story, yeah. And it's great to welcome her as well.
Now, speaking of Sarah as well, no Maxie this week. He's in the States, but we've got the world famous Sarah Daenerys Targaryen Ollie straight from Saturday Stretch. Hello, Sez.
Hello, gentlemen.
Since we last had Sarah on the podcast in 2018,
yes.
Hasn't her brand skyrocketed?
Ooh, Tom,
strong personality.
She has blue ticks on all social mediums. She's Mrs. World, as far as I'm concerned. It's quite incredible. And congratulations on your recent elevation to knighthood.
Thank you. Well, yes, I will be dressing up as Daenerys Stormborn.
Yes.
First of her name.
From GOT.
Mother of Dragons, this Saturday Stretch.
Tell us why.
Well, it's Game of Thrones round, Tom.
Yep.
Which you should know.
You know, I know that. For the listeners, which is obviously part of the Foxtel package as well.
Exactly.
That's what I was trying to lead you into.
Game of Thrones is coming back on Monday, and we're having a Game of Thrones round to promote it.
Can I plug it?
If you're Daenerys Targaryen, what character would Tom be from Game of Thrones? I was kind of thinking like a sort of Jaime Lannister kind of, maybe minus the incest.
No, but who's Daenerys? Daenerys' little sidekick?
Oh, yes.
What's his name?
Jorah.
Jorah.
Yeah.
Jorah,
which makes sense.
Yeah, I'll take that. That's fine. I'm not a fan of Game of Thrones, really. So
you're in the minority there.
Yeah, I am. No, it's not really my sort of show.
Come next Monday, that's going to be absolutely massive. And across all of Foxtel as well, across all of Fox Sports, everyone getting behind Game of Thrones. But let's turn our attention to the footy. And our final, it's only round 3, but I think come round 4, we've got some sample size. But Sarah, it's only round 3, but
Tom Liberatore will be All-Australian this year.
Oh, that's a good call.
Yes. I'm looking at his performance from the weekend, 30 touches, 22 contested, 12 clearances, 9 tackles. He's back to his best, and he's the spiritual leader of that club. Yeah. I'm loving it from Libba.
Kingy said that Libba has actually changed the dynamic of the Western Bulldogs midfield and giving them a harder edge. He missed all of last season, but even during 2017 when he was there, he just didn't have that same edge. That's his 2014 form is outstanding, but it feels like 5 years later he's starting to get back to career best form.
He's got a few more tats this time.
He does.
No, he's really taken his game to a new level, and he's a really important part of that midfield because he's allowing other players to get out and play different roles as well.
Tom, it's only round 3, but
yeah, it's only round 3, but already we can see the 666 making the game better.
Better.
And the reason for this is that scoring might be slightly down, or quite a bit down, but we are, after 3 rounds, again, that's why it's only round 3, at an all-time high since 2000 for inside 50s.
Yep.
So teams are getting the ball inside their forward 50 more than they have at any other time this century. But all they can't do is kick straight at the moment.
Is it also that, so this is interesting about the inside 50 discussion, is it also about the quality and the depth of inside 50? Like, I almost feel like we should be measuring inside 30, inside 25s now.
That's fair enough. And I'm clearly there's a lot of inside 50s that are not proper inside
50s. Dirty. The club talk is dirty inside 50s.
But that's been the case last year and the year before that as well. So the stat is still relevant across the last 19 seasons because it's been the same stat. And that's why I think it's probably a good sign. But they just can't kick straight enough. And we saw a number of teams over the weekend butcher clear opportunities. And that can lose you games. It can cost you finals as well.
We're talking about this off-air yesterday about the introduction of the starting positions and whether that was introduced to improve the aesthetics of the game or whether it is done to increase scoring.
It's a really good question. I think the AFL would love scoring to get higher, and as a result, the aesthetics would improve. But I think, Sarah, it's also possible to have a really entertaining open game where the scores aren't necessarily really high. And the example of that from the weekend was Brisbane versus Port Adelaide. No, I don't think any team got to 100 in that match, but it felt like a really fluid open game that was good to watch.
You just like watching any game with Brisbane in it, let's be honest.
Yes. but that's scoring is only one part of an attractive game.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. Is on scoring though, and on the AFL wanting to see higher scores, there was a discussion during the Swans and Carlton game on Fox Footy that the commentators believe that the umpires are now more willing to pay free kicks between the arcs.
Yep.
Are you seeing that? And if so, is that problematic? Well, because in my opinion, that is problematic.
Well, yeah, and I suppose the whole theory behind awarding more free kicks is that we have less stoppages and less congestion, and automatically players have to spread from the free kick. So it makes a lot of sense in that perspective. But that comes back to the whole free kick debate, is that free kicks are up, as you mentioned, Tom, and fans are flipping frustrated.
Yeah, they are.
Such a U word.
fans are frustrated, and they always will be at free kicks and umpires. It will never be a perfect science, or it will never please everyone. In fact, it will probably frustrate everyone. But when you look at it from an AFL perspective, would they rather have an umpire see a half free kick and not give it and throw the ball up and come in and everyone gets around the ball? Or would they rather pay that half free kick and everyone spreads? And clearly the latter is their preference.
Well, I'm not sure if that's true, though, because doesn't everyone say the best umpiring is on grand final day when the umpires put the whistles away?
No, you're right there, but that's where the aesthetics don't matter on grand final day, because everyone's enthralled by the match. But in a home and away game, I think the AFL wants it to be open and therefore wants less ball up.
But how about on Friday night when we saw, 50 free kicks paid with Essendon and Melbourne?
And then 130 to 112 scoreline.
That was a bit out of control, though.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm not saying it's right, but I think that's what the AFL is thinking. And that's what the directive is, clearly, to pay more free kicks. And with more rules, you're going to have more free kicks.
Well, this discussion is a really good lead-in to the mailbag segment, where we hear from
Max's mailbag.
Yeah, Max's mailbag. So I've collated the questions in Max's absence. So the first question is around an issue that I know you sort of feel quite strongly about or have some thoughts on, Tom. From Mark McDonnell, why on earth aren't umpires full-time professionals? Are we the last and worst competition in the world in this regard?
Yeah, I can't speak for other football codes. I don't know what happens in the NRL, or I assume that soccer referees are full-time, but I also don't know that for a fact. There are a couple of full-time AFL umpires, but are they automatically better umpires, Sarah? Because I think the extra time they spend in the umpiring 9-to-5 job, for lack of a better term, is doing clinics and teaching others rather than actually honing their craft. I get why full-time umpiring is a debate, but I think the bigger debate should be streamlining the rules to make them clearer to understand.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, in the future, we probably will have full-time umpires, especially when we see the AFLW expand and explode, and there's going to be more need to have umpires throughout the whole 12 months of the year. But the umpires are amazing. There's lawyers among them. You know, they all have their 9-to-5 jobs, and then on the weekend, you know, they're bouncing the ball. So I think we need to be less critical of them. The issue is that they've got so many rules to police at the moment. We're making their jobs near impossible.
Just because you spend more time at something, it doesn't mean you're necessarily better at it. Yeah. Now, that's sort of counterintuitive against the 10,000 hours rule, but there are countless examples where you can spend too much time at something and end up confusing yourself.
Is that sort of reflected in your golf game, Tom?
It actually is. Yes. Seriously, you sometimes get worse the more time you spend at it. That's a physical skill, but I'm not convinced that having every umpire as a full-time umpire is going to make them completely better and absolutely flawless. I think the AFL needs to show the lead with the way they construct the rules.
Okay, question from Isabel Rush, who's part of our digital video unit up in Sydney. Good on you, Isabel, for tuning in. What did you make of the trainers walking Nat Fyfe off the ground, Sarah, after a serious head clash? He clearly couldn't walk. So Fyfe was taken in that really heavy hit against the St Kilda player on Sunday afternoon. No stretcher was brought out, no neck brace was brought out, and clearly Fyfe wasn't all quite there, as two trainers had his arms around them and he was almost dragged off. Now, he was very close to the boundary line at the time, but it just wasn't a good look.
Did they pause the game to get him off?
Yes, which is not right.
What do you mean it's not right?
They should only pause the game when there's a stretcher.
So, but that goes to, there should have been a stretcher, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly. There should have been a stretcher to get him out. That was a seriously scary incident. When you see someone's eyes roll to the back of their head like that, it makes you feel physically sick. I had a physical reaction to seeing those replays. There should have been a stretcher, of course. Where are the doctors at that point in time as well?
Well, yeah.
Shouldn't there be a doctor there as well in that situation?
Yeah, it should be both. Doctors do sit on the bench, and if one doctor from one team is otherwise distracted helping with another player, then, say, down in the rooms, then the doctor from the other team should come on. And there's also an AFL doctor at the venue as well, which is important, sitting just behind the bench.
Yep.
Or they certainly were last year. But the umpires, once the stretcher wasn't called, they should have just started the game. And it's brutal, but those are the rules, that if there's no stretcher called, you play on. And I think they made a big mistake there, the doctors, but also the umpires, in not enforcing the stretcher.
No, I think the umpires would just use their common sense, though, in stopping the game regardless.
Well, yeah, but it's actually not the laws of the game. It's not the laws. So yeah, the rules are clear. When there's a stretcher, you stop the game. When there's not a stretcher, you're actually not allowed to stop the game.
Imagine the poor umpires are getting bashed for everything. Imagine if they just let play go on, as Nat Fife is just lying there with his eyes back in his head.
Well, it would have made Fremantle think again, because they're the ones who didn't get the stretcher.
Yeah, that's right.
Just on a separate note, I know that we're not doctors and we're not concussion experts, but how could he play this week after that hit?
Well, in the States, you automatically miss a week. You're certainly in the NFL, if you receive a concussion, you don't play the next week. That was, it looked nasty. We know Nat Fife is a tough bugger, but...
But that doesn't have any correlation
to what
happens to your brain.
Every player is different. Every player reacts differently just because we are all different as human beings.
Yeah.
But that looked nasty.
I can't see how he's going to play. Some players get really small knocks and miss months, and some players get big knocks and play a fortnight later. You don't know.
Particularly off a six-day break as well, but the Eagles and the Dockers will be playing on a Saturday
question,
night.
Good question, Isabel. Well done.
Yes. Nice work. Now, this is a question that's right in our wheelhouse. Todd Workman asks, the Collingwood player, being Jamie Elliott, refusing an interview as shown on Bounce on Sunday night. How's the feeling on this? And this... To give some context as well, it was also shown on the Footy Show. It's probably where it really grabbed some legs, where Jamie Elliott was doorstopped by our very own and very loyal Drew Jones from Fox Sports News.
Yeah.
And Drew asked, can we have a chat, saying, you know, things are good at the moment. Collingwood's up and about. After that win over the Tigers, Jamie Elliott's playing quite well himself personally. And his response was, no, can't be bothered, mate.
Yeah, well, without wanting to make too big a deal of it, it's absolutely not good enough. I don't care if you've lost by 100 points or not. This is an industry that's funded by fans, and fans get their information via the media and broadcasters. And the reason they're paid so much is because sponsors then give money to those broadcasters to show games and produce content. And to do that, to do what Jamie Elliott did to Drew, and it was relatively polite, I guess, albeit dismissive, I thought was bizarre. After a win and he's playing quite well, I can't imagine that happening in America too often.
Well, it doesn't actually happen too often at Collingwood. So
no, it doesn't.
Scott
Pendlebury
and Adam Treloar, I think, are the best people to do a doorstop interview in general, overall. And we have to remember as well that often the public will look at doorstops and think it's just media vultures just rushing on a talent or a person. But Drew, actually, I was speaking to Drew about this. His theory on doorstopping is he actually doesn't shove the microphone in their face first. He actually asks before going and asking for an on-the-record question.
I mean, Jamie Elliott made that decision to decline the interview, but he has to also live with the consequence of how now we as the media and the fans think of him.
Mm.
And my opinion of him has dropped after that.
Yep, that's fair. And the layman might suggest, well, if he can't be bothered, he can't be bothered. Why does he owe the media anything? Well, it's actually not speaking to the media. It's actually speaking to his fans. It's like coaches speaking at press conferences that get frustrated with journalists.
Mm.
Sometimes it's fair enough. But by and large, they're speaking to their fans and explaining what happened in the game to the supporters and the members.
That's exactly what Simon Goodwin did on Friday night when he was actually specifically asked, what do you say to the fans now who came in with high expectations? And he says, I'm hurting, the coaches are hurting, and I'm sure the fans are hurting as well. Speaking of
I would love to know whether the Collingwood Media Department, who I rate very highly, had a word to Jamie Elliott about that or not.
Because
it's not their style. It's not Eddie McGuire's style.
I reckon Nathan Buckley might have said something.
Yeah, interesting.
He's the best performer in the media.
He is. Yeah. This question from Maximum Gornography. Will having Stephen May and Jake Lever back in the Demons' defence provide an automatic fix to their defensive woes, Tom, or is the problem more system-based?
The problem is system-based, based on what Gary Lyon and Paul Roos were saying on the couch last night, and many other experts. But When's the next time Lever and May are going to play together? Maybe round 13 or 14 at the earliest? Yeah. When Lever's not back for a while yet. Yeah. So, and by then the season might be all but gone. So it's almost not even worth considering those two are going to provide a quick fix. It will help if they're both at their best, but it's a long time away.
But also they've never played a game together.
No.
So we don't know how they're going to gel.
That's right.
So that's a big unknown.
If we've learnt one thing in footy, it's that you can't rely on one person to be the saviour for your club or even two. It requires a group effort, and at the moment, Melbourne are failing in that regard.
Well, we'll speak a little bit more about covering for injuries with Jason Dunstall and when we talk about Richmond, but this question from Footy Sausage. Last year, Eagles lost Josh Kennedy for 11 weeks, Nick Nat for 10, yeah. Gaff missed 6 games, Darling and Shuey for effectively 6 each with first quarter injuries, yet the Eagles still won the premiership. Surely Richmond can cover a couple of weeks to star players, or do they not have the depth at the Tigers? And looking at the Tigers' injuries, for so long they've had such an incredible run with injuries, but finally they're having some bad luck.
Isn't Anthony Miles and Sam Lloyd must be going, oh yeah. We've been waiting for this to happen for our whole careers. We ship off to other clubs. They'd be getting games now. They'd be playing 22 matches this year. The thing is, when Richmond got Tom Lynch, they had to get rid of players, their depth players. Now they need those depth players because they've got injuries. I mean, the Tigers have been so lucky with injury.
Yep.
They didn't have any injuries in that premiership year. I mean, your four best players going down with injury is pretty significant. And I think if you took the four best players out of most clubs, you'd struggle. But I think it also shows how good the Eagles were last year.
Yeah.
And I think we really underestimated how amazing that premiership result was. And we're seeing it now. You know, most of us tip Collingwood to win on the weekend. And
yep.
West Coast keep getting it done. And now they're bringing in more players. They've got Oscar Allen making a difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gaff's back
Tom
in the
Hickey.
Team. Tom Hickey, what a story. So
yeah,
the Eagles are flying.
I can't believe, and gamble responsibly, the Eagles were at 320 heading into the MCG.
Yeah,
game
very juicy odds, Thomas.
For anyone that's played Supercoach, I know you're a big fan, Ben, and I no longer play it, but I used to play it.
Yes.
That you make a decision at the start. You either go for lots of mid-tier to lower-tier players and have depth,
yes.
or you go for your superstars and then just try to play money ball at the bottom end. Richmond have gone the latter situation this year, haven't they, with Tom Lynch. They've effectively cost themselves Miles and these guys to get Tom Lynch in, and it's backfired now because they don't have the depth. And I completely agree with the latter point in Sausage.
Yeah, Footy Sausage.
Footy Sausage.
That West Coast have the depth and Richmond just don't, and that's just the reality of their list construction.
Okay. Well, another question I missed from Maximum Gornography.
Good questions, aren't they?
Yeah, there's some really intelligent questions from listeners out there.
Some
thank you.
Some not so intelligent as well, but that's okay.
Which AFL coach would you least want to be right now and why? Very interesting question from Maximum Gornography.
I reckon Brad Scott.
I'm Alan Richardson.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
Why Richo? We'll get on to North in a tick.
I still think Richo's job's very... Richo, his job is very much on a knife's edge ahead of 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think he needs more than a couple of wins against lowly sides. And the Essendon win was a good win, and they played quite well against Fremantle to do it. It requires sustained success. In 2014, St Kilda were 3-2 after 5 rounds, and in the 8, they won one more game for the rest of the year and finished last. Well, so the first 3 or 4 rounds don't necessarily reflect an entire season.
Oh, just let the poor Saints just bask in this, you know,
yeah, I know.
Window
playing
of
well
sunshine.
They're playing well.
It takes nothing away from what they've done,
yep.
but they've got bigger hurdles to climb.
So this leads into our final question from the mailbag segment from Campbell Fox, who asks, when will you guys be putting some heat on Brad Scott and North Melbourne? We have been abysmal 3 weeks in a row, yet seem to be flying under the radar. Lack of personnel changes, despite losses, should be questioned. And they were questioned by our friend at AFL Media, Mark McGowan, who really held his ground in that press conference
with Brad
Scott.
He did such a good job because Brad Scott looked like he was ready to punch a wall.
Yes.
And I'm sure he has punched walls before, Brad Scott. And Mark McGowan really stood his ground, and he was asking, you know, very appropriate questions because there is a sense of restlessness at Arden Street. They've gone 0-3 after this huge recruiting spree. They probably, you know, performed above expectations last year. So the thought going into this season was potentially they could play finals and make the 8. That's not going to happen, is it?
I tell you why they aren't getting the attention for not performing. Because what's a sexier story? Mm. Essendon playing poorly, Melbourne playing poorly, or North Melbourne playing poorly? That North Melbourne's clearly the bronze medalist in that. No one really expected too much from them. They're not a big club. And
No, but I think their supporters on the back of last year did expect them to be performing a lot better.
Well,
the
supporters were wrong because I tipped them to come 16th or something, and I don't know where you tipped them to come.
Yeah, I can't remember. But I was one of the ones that, you know, said that they would finish bottom four last year, and I had to put my hand up and say how wrong I was. No, but I think there should be more heat on Brad Scott in North Melbourne.
There's only a certain amount of hours in a day or column inches, though, and that is clearly directed at the bigger clubs when it's a 50-50.
But how long does he stay there before he thinks this is this is as much as I can do with this group and I move on? Because he's been there for a while now.
There was suggestions or rumours that Gold Coast were into him and they ended up appointing Stuart Dew and Brad Scott re-signed at North Melbourne. You're spot on. How long can you beat a club without making a grand final? And they had a couple of prelims and they gave it a crack and they did absolutely everything they could. But to go again is a really difficult task.
Well, it's interesting that, and it kind of leads us into the power rankings as well, because this week North Melbourne are bottom of the power rankings, which normally Maxi puts together. But this week North Melbourne are the bottom.
So you had them below Carlton, Tom?
I did, because the power rankings is based on who you think would win a game this week. And I looked at it and I thought I would tip Carlton against North Melbourne.
Carlton and North Melbourne were 17th and 18th for every single person, but North Melbourne just had a few more, had one more 18th prediction or 18th ballot from our power rankings experts. Last week, the Gold Coast Suns were 18th in the power rankings. This week, they're 12th.
Yeah, they'll take that.
The Suns.
Yeah. That's quite unbelievable. So I think we've seen three rounds now. So for some, that's enough sample size. And the Suns now are up in 12th position.
So that means on a whole, 13, 14, that means people think they could beat, what, five teams?
I think it's too high. I had them lower than 12th.
Yeah, so do I. But an away win at Marvel was excellent, although the Dogs could not have played any worse. They missed chances. They had so many opportunities. But credit to the Suns. They're doing well and good on them. I'm happy, Sarah. They should be 3-0, really.
They really should be, shouldn't they?
They can't make the 8, though, can they?
No, not
this year.
No headline for you now, Ben.
But do you know what you're seeing at the Suns, though? Is, and Stuart Dew really needs some credit here, is that he's found all these players that are misfits, you know, or outcasts and haven't had a spot at other teams. And they're, you know, they're B-graders or C-graders, but they want to play.
Yep.
And they want to play for him. And that says a lot about, you know, hard work over talent. These are just, you know, a lot of plodders.
Mm.
They're starting to get some good talent from the kids, but they really want to play.
Yep. I really like the way Stuart Dew opened up the doors for the media as well.
How good was that quarter time address?
Was it quarter time? Three quarter time.
Quarter time.
Nah, it's terrific. And I know that not every club can do it, and Gold Coast are in a unique position where they sort of have to do it.
Yep.
But absolutely full credit. Kudos to Stuart Dew and the Suns for allowing that, because that is amazing access. Better than any player interview at halftime or during the game I could think of.
Because that's literally fly on the wall kind
of stuff. It's organic,
isn't it? It is. Yeah, it's great. And I was really impressed with the way he spoke as well. That's the other thing.
So at the top of the power rankings, West Coast unanimously number one, Geelong unanimously number two, the Giants then third, Collingwood fourth. So last week we're talking about a top three with West Coast, Collingwood and Geelong. The Giants have sort of made their way into third. And then at number five is the Brisbane Lions.
Yoo-hoo! Yes.
Uncaged, baby.
I reckon I had them higher than that.
Did
mine?
You?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Can we talk about the Giants quickly first?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're just so slick, aren't they, Sarah? And who was it saying last night that Lachie Whitfield could be the best player of them all?
Someone said he was the most skillful player he's ever played. I think it might have been Stevie Johnson on Saturday, on Sunday on Channel 7.
He can run, gain 20 metres, and then kick it 65 metres.
Either foot.
Yeah, on either foot. He's so valuable. I love the way he plays. We talk about the Giants and their window, and we sort of all, I think, assume that it had closed by now, or
no,
pretty much closed.
It's very much ajar.
It's ajar. Mm-hmm. But we all thought that 2016, 17, 18 was their real time. They had all these stars at the club at the one time. But why can't they win it now? Why can't they win it next year? They've still got great leadership. I think Leon Cameron's still a good coach. And they're hardened. They've lost before, which means they're probably burnt by that and they'll do better in the future.
Well, the pressure's off, at least for the time being. And that could be the biggest thing for them this year, that we're looking at other clubs and not the Giants. I'll tell you what, if Jeremy Cameron can string together a couple of games like he did on the weekend, they can win the premiership because he was unstoppable.
13-7.
Incredible. And he could have kicked 10.
And he could win the Col. He's got the potential to win the Coleman by quite a fair bit, because he does get in the habit of kicking big bags. Yep. And I really like Jeremy Finlayson forward. So he was a key defender.
Yep.
He's always been a strong body and a long left foot kick, but not necessarily an accurate left foot kick that you want out of defence. But I think his kicking is more valued kicking towards the goals rather than trying to spot up a teammate up the field. I reckon they've found something nice.
Was that
nice
the first time he's played forward like that?
Yes, that permanently for a game, yes.
Yeah. Re-signed last year for 2 years, Finlayson, so they've got him as well for a little bit.
They did. Now, it's time on the Fox Footy podcast to talk to a man who has been the face of Fox Footy for quite some time, but he is widely regarded as one of the greats of all time at the Hawthorn Football Club. Over 1,250 goals, and he's got a big weekend coming up. Bouncing also, he's heading across to the west for the Western Derby between the Dockers and the Eagles. We're speaking, of course, of Hawthorn legendary goal kicker Jason Dunstall. Hello, Jason.
How are we doing?
We're good, mate. Thanks for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. You were up in Sydney on the weekend for that Giants and Tigers game. We'll talk about some of the issues that happened on the field, but remarkably, probably what's been lost is just how good the Giants were and some of their stars, particularly up forward. What was sort of your takeaway from the Giants on the weekend?
Well, I think one of the things that a lot of people have overlooked, I mean, as good as they were, and there's a lot of talk about Richmond, how they're missing Rance and Revolt, and now they've got Cochin with issues, and Hooley and Grimes and Martin with a suspension. We spoke to Leon Cameron pre-game on the weekend, and he said the Giants are still missing five or six of their best 22. So Toby Green, Callan Ward wasn't there, Aidan Corr, Langdon, Patton. There's a number of players that they'd like to get back as well, and they still look an incredibly strong team. They move the ball quickly when Jeremy Cameron's in that sort of form. I mean, to have 30 possessions and 12 shots at goal from centre-half forward is just ridiculous. So there's a lot to like about them going forward. And for the Tigers, they've just got to find a way to win a few games and sort of keep themselves in the mix until they do get a couple of their players back.
What do you make of the Tigers, Jason? Because I guess there's two schools of thought. One is that they've got players missing and they'll come back, or most of them will come back and be okay. The other school of thought is it's a very steep hill to climb from where they are at the moment.
It is, particularly without Rance. But, I mean, they still play a good brand of football. They have to go back 2 years to the point where they're pressure was incredibly manic. Those small forwards and the little utilities around the ground that just made it a nightmare for the opposition teams. They have to get that to the absolute optimum level so that they can manage to beat some of the mid-range, mid-tier sides until they get a Revolt back and a couple of the others. So I'm not going to write them off yet. I know it's a pretty steep hill to climb, but I still think they can get themselves into the mix.
Jason, you talk about the small forwards there. They unearthed another one on the weekend in Sydney Stack. What did you make of his debut?
Well, I thought he was very, very good. Played down back, but showed some great zip. He attacked the ball a couple of times. It's funny, he was really nervous. His first kick, he just went to chip it sideways, kicked it straight over a teammate's head out on the full. But to come back from that and actually play a really good game, showed some good evasive skills. He read the play pretty well. And it's a really good story to see where he's come from.
Jason, the story predominantly to come out of the game was the attention that Dustin Martin received from Matt DeBoer and the consequent suspension and potentially more to come in terms of fines or Please Explains for his gestures, infamous gestures that were caught by the Fox Sports crew. Being at the ground and sort of seeing the attention that Matt DeBoer was giving Martin and probably other Giants players as well, what did you make of it all, and was it all above board? Was it all legal from your perspective?
Yeah, I thought Matty DeBoer played it really well. And look, Dustin Martin's been around long enough to understand he's going to get attention. I don't think it was anything untoward other than he wasn't having a good day and he allowed it to get the better of him emotionally and he snapped, basically. In actual fact, DeBoer was baiting him and he got one or two free kicks going back the other way just because Dustin was getting a little bit frustrated with the attention he was getting and wasn't getting the ball in his hand. So, he hasn't reached the standards of last year or the year before, Dustin Martin, but you know, we know he's a great player and he'll bounce back pretty quickly.
So what do you do if you're in Damien Hardwick's shoes? What do you say to Dustin Martin? Do you give him a few days off to go and reflect and come back and try and find some form? What tack do Richmond take?
Well, I've got to be honest, Sarah, I don't give a bloke a couple of days off when he's just been rubbed out for 2 weeks. That disappoints the club and the rest of his teammates, I suspect. So I'd want to see him working really hard around the club. Look, some players just have that emotional streak in them that is very hard to contain. And you can say all the right things and tell them exactly how they need to play things. But in the moment, they get caught up a little bit and let the emotion spill over. And there's no doubt Dusty sort of leans towards that bent. But As I said, star player. He won't be copping that, knowing that he wants his performance levels to be a hell of a lot higher than they were on the weekend. So I think he'll be okay.
Jason, Hawthorn had one top 20 draft selection in their side on the weekend, aside from the obvious. One top 20 selection they've actually picked is probably the best way to phrase it. What is it about Hawthorn that makes them continually competitive and such a good club? We've spoken about it for so long, but 15 years ago or 17 or 18 years ago when you were directly involved, did you have any idea that you'd be able to form a culture that has been so successful and endured every single test that's come at them for so long?
Well, a lot of that's been driven by the coach. I mean, we were fortunate enough that we actually picked up a genius of a coach, and no one could have predicted how good he would be back then. And he just finds a way to get the best out of his players. They cherry-pick little holes on their list and fill them with players from other clubs. Scrimshaw is one of the latest ones that really wasn't getting a great run up north. He's come down and looks to have settled in really well in defence for the Hawks. So they just keep finding players that they believe can play a role for them and then getting the best out of them. And, you know, they're missing a couple of players at the moment. So whilst I don't expect them to be right up there this year, they're always going to be competitive.
What did you see in Clarko? Take us back to the first meeting or his interview that made you think he could be a good AFL coach.
I spoke very differently about the way he saw the game being played. I mean, 5 minutes in, his tactical nous was already coming through. The teacher background in him and the way he wanted to develop a young list, it just all married in beautifully. So, I mean, it was a very easy decision to make in the end because I think he stood out in those interviews a long way ahead of all the others.
Three rounds into the season, Jason, and it's not promising signs for North Melbourne after an excellent off-season from a recruiting perspective. Things just haven't really clicked on the field yet, and sort of a guy who's taken a lot of the hit in the past couple of days has been Ben Brown. Some actually really scathing criticism of Brown. Do you think it's justified, or is there sort of a bigger issue at North Melbourne in terms of delivery inside 50 or just forward depth? Sort of, what's your read sort of on North Melbourne at the moment?
It's amazing how quickly we turn on players, isn't it?
Yeah.
he's been a really consistent player for them, Ben Brown, and we know he needs a little bit of ball sent down to him in the air. He's very much a lead mark and kick goal player, but he does it so well. North have just got to give him opportunities to ply his trade. Now, Frawley played very well on him on the weekend, and it was probably a good matchup for Chip Frawley just to play on someone like Ben Brown and not worry about anything else other than spoiling and keeping him away from the footy. But the quality of ball coming down wasn't great. You spoke about their recruiting in the off-season. I think there's still a few players short. It still looks to be a touch thin, their list. So, you know, they're going to have to play at their very best each week if they're going to get some wins on the board as well.
Do you think he's missing a partner in crime down there, Jace? We've seen at Melbourne that Tom McDonald has really struggled without Jesse Hogan there, and that's become quite apparent at the Demons. Is there a similarity at North?
Yeah, look, there probably is. And that goes a little towards the lack of depth on their list that I'm talking about. You'd like to have multiple options, particularly up forward, a little bit more depth in the midfield. So that's something that they're going to address, I'm sure, at the end of the season. You can't fix a list in 1 year. It takes 2 or 3 years to fill some of those holes. So they've still got some issues going ahead. But, I mean, given all that, he's still reached a really, really high level the last few years, Ben Brown. So I get a little bit frustrated that people want to tip into a bloke just because he has an off day.
Like the media.
Like you both.
That's what I was waiting for. Jason, I was looking through the top VFL AFL goal kickers of all time, and clearly your name is right towards the very apex of that list. But I did notice that Buddy Franklin's sitting on 923 and Matthew Lloyd is 926. So you'd imagine that Buddy will go past Lloydy pretty soon. You're still, what, 330-odd away. Are you just a little bit nervous that Buddy might just get past you at some point and therefore put you back in your place?
Oh, look, I'm always happy in my place, Tom. Don't worry about that. I'd be thrilled for Buddy to keep going. The problem is the way the game's played now, you have a good year and you're probably kicking 60 or 70 goals a year.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to play for another 5 years, 6 years if he's going to get over 1,300 at that top level, which is very, very difficult once you get into your 30s. and you start to have a few body issues. And we know he hasn't trained much in the last 18 months. So we just got to keep our fingers crossed that he can get the body healthy and keep entertaining us the way he does.
How many do you think he might finish on goals-wise at the end of his career, Jason? Can he get to 1,100-ish?
I reckon he'll keep playing for a number of years and he could finish on 1,253.
Good from you, Jason. You'll be heading across the West on the weekend for the big derby. That's going to be a big game on Saturday night for the West Coast Eagles and Fremantle at Optus Stadium. Should be a great atmosphere. Enjoy the game and look forward to seeing you across Fox Footy on right throughout the year.
Will do, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much to Hawthorn great Jason Dunstall for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. I think Buddy, from what it sounds like, I don't think Buddy's passing him anytime soon.
Not anytime soon. He made a valid point, but how long's Buddy's contract for? Another 5 years, Sarah?
He can stay as long as he wants, Tom.
Yeah, but how many goals can he kick in that time is my point.
No, not more than 50 more
seasons. I don't think he's got 305 seasons.
No.
The Swans struggling. Need him to kick that many goals, but he's not gonna.
Yeah.
It's now time for Australia's favourite segment on the Fox Footy podcast. It's time for Fair or Farce.
Fair or Farce.
Oh, my God. Okay, I've missed that. Fair or Farce.
Sarah's got some nice sort of pitch.
Yeah. That means a lot from you because you're a musical man. Yeah.
Thank you. She's like a young Cyndi Lauper. Ben, to you first.
Yes, Tom.
Fair or Farce. There should be a Thursday night game every week.
No, that's a farce, I don't think. I think they've got a nice balance of Thursday night games at the moment. Don't do too much of it.
Why?
My point. I think it's great. It is great for TV ratings. I do get that. I really struggle to speak about this objectively, Tom, because I have to think about the roster. I think I have to roster someone on a Sarah does as well.
Yeah, it's my duty now.
Roster
thank you.
Someone on a Thursday night, which is quite tough. But from a fan's perspective, I think it would work, but I'm just not totally sold yet.
I love it.
I know that wasn't a very convincing response. I'm just not totally sold yet.
Well, I disagree with you, but that's fine. This is why we have robust discussions. Mm. Sarah.
Yes.
Fair or fast, the Brisbane Lions will win a final this season.
Oh, wow.
Fair. I'm uncaged. I'm on the bandwagon. I'm ready for it.
Good.
I'm behind them.
I love watching
them.
How good. Have a big O. Big O.
The big O. Yeah,
Melbourne should have
great.
Picked him up. He was playing reserves at Casey, I think, wasn't
this
he?
This is like the only other team in the AFL that I can actually watch and like love and support. Mm. Every other team besides the Swans,
Yeah.
But this team, if they won, I'd be so pumped for
There's
them.
There's so much respect for the build of the Lions and how it's just they've put all these puzzle pieces in place and they've all come together and we're starting to see some reward and some results on the field.
Especially when you contrast them with Carlton.
Yes. Ooh. You have, yep.
Yeah, the Blues need to start winning.
Yeah, they do. But just on badly. 3 from the last 33 or something absurd for the Blues.
Haven't scored over 100 for a long time.
No, they don't. They just don't do that. They score like tail enders. They're terrible. But you have Fagan and Noble and Greg Swan. Very hard to fail with those three people in key positions, and Luke Hodge and Lachie Neal's a steal as well. Yep. Ben,
yes.
Fair or farce, after the win over Melbourne, Essendon has it rediscovered its mojo.
Now, that's a farce, Tom. That's an only round three, but farce, I would think. The Bombers, I think David King put it nicely. If you want to play a game of basketball against the Bombers are going to get you most of the time. Their drive out of half, what being there live and you see the full ground and their ability to spread from the back line, reminded me of when they thrashed Geelong 2 years ago on a Saturday night when the Cats were just deplorable. But their run out of the back line was awesome. I think we have to pay full credit here to Sean McKernan.
Oh, yeah.
So he,
what a hero.
He's done a really bad hammy where he could miss sort of 6 to 8 weeks. But he stayed out there very heroically, maybe
stupidly. I think he kicked
stupidly.
A goal after he
Yeah, he did.
Hammy.
Yeah,
shouldn't have been a free kick.
Off a set shot. But McDonald, Tip and Woody, so a couple of guys really lifted their output. McDonald, Tip and Woody, Zaharakis in particular, so bad the week before. Zaharakis had 30. McDonald, Tip and Woody kicked 4 goals. Darcy Parris showed why he was picked 5 with some drive. And Dylan Shield had 31, even though his kicking wasn't that great. But hold your horses on the Dons, Tom.
Okay, they haven't quite rediscovered their mojo yet. I was on the bench for radio.
Oh, yes?
And it was amazing how many players were coming to the bench after goals and being sent back on. And they were pleading, let me come off. But no one was ready to come back on because they had 3 on the bench the entire game after a hamstring injury to Kobe Mutch early. And then they had 2 on the bench for about half the game for a variety of reasons.
So are you noticing that more? You've done a couple of games in the boundary now. Are you noticing that more this season compared to last season? And could the potential reason for that, fair or farce, be because of no runners out there this season?
No, I don't think so. I think it's purely because the limited rotations and the injury at the start. Sorry to burst your bubble.
No, it's quite all right.
So farce. Sarah, fair or farce, Dusty will never reach the heights he did in 2017 again.
No fast.
Good question, Tom.
It is a good question. I mean, those heights were pretty high, weren't they?
It's not a criticism to say he'll never reach those heights again.
No. But I'm not going to go there just because I think he's too talented to put that stopper on him. But he's a long way off that form at the moment.
And he was a long way off it last year, in fairness. He was very good last year.
Is it since he signed this big contract? His form has dropped off significantly, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, he signed the contract just before the final series. He had a very good final series, but then since then, just hasn't clicked for him. He's got age on his side. That's why I think he's still got some time left to rediscover the form.
Lee Matthews said it could have been the best season anyone's ever played, which says something coming from Lethal, once had 40 and kicked 11 in a game.
Standard.
Or thereabouts.
That's insane.
It is insane. But, he sets the bar so high, it's going to be very hard for him to get back over that bar. Mm. Ben.
Yes.
Brad Scott having a crack at a journo is a window into his stressful soul. Fair or farce?
Brad's into his stressful soul. I reckon at the moment that's got a bit of fairness about it, Tom. Yeah. I reckon it's got a bit of fairness. Brad Scott's a very interesting media performer. I think, as I said to you, if he was a sort of a batsman coming in at number four, or maybe even number five in a T20 game sort of in the overs 15 to 20, he'd be one of the great deflectors, just getting off strike down to the third man and fine leg, playing behind the wicket. Because when the Roos are under the pump, he does deflect quite a lot. We saw in round just before ahead of round two, he deflected about the contact off the ball and, you know, telling these players that you shouldn't be punching anymore, just deflecting that issue there and the clash with Mark McGowan as well. Yeah, it's not a bad question from you, Tom.
I think that's a fair then. Mm. Sarah, last one to you. Can't believe I'm asking this, but here we are. Fair or farce? The Swans should consider trading Buddy if two things happen. A, there is a willing suitor, and B, Sydney decides to embark on a full-scale rebuild. Fair or farce?
Farce. As if there was ever going to be a fair response to that.
Well, take your Sydney Swans beanie off and give us a proper response.
I actually don't wear a beanie.
Okay,
I've got a scarf. I've got an Alira-Lee badge.
take off your Alira-Lee badge. Why farce?
No, I think they've made such a big commitment with Buddy there. And at the end of the day, people come to see Buddy. And that's important in that Sydney market.
I get the feeling that you think that there is some legitimacy, Tom, about the thought of trading Buddy away.
No, I don't think there's any legitimacy about it.
He's also very happy up there. He's got his wife just into there.
I agree, but I just think
they've got a fabulous lifestyle up there. Do you need me to keep going up there?
What we've seen in the last few years, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, so don't take me out of context. But just consider this. Players on big contracts are more vulnerable than any other players if their club doesn't start performing to a level that allows those players on big contracts to share in their success. Buddy's been unbelievable, and I don't suspect that he's going to go anywhere. But if a club came calling and said, we will give you a first-round draft pick because we're in the premiership window and we will pick up Buddy Franklin's salary, and that will allow the Sydney Swans to rebuild via three players with that same money, then why would the Swans, if they are rebuilding and if they do finish top four, not consider it?
A few caveats around that response.
Are you just trying to trump Sam Edmund today?
What did he say?
He's got this beautiful digital story about how the Swans landed Buddy. It's a three-part story. The first part came out today.
No, I haven't seen it.
Are you just trying to one-up him or something?
No, not at all. I haven't seen it. I look forward to reading it.
Buddy's
a superstar, but in today's trade landscape, I don't think we can ever say never to these sorts of things.
Well, Buddy Swans take on Melbourne on Thursday night as we turn our attention to round four.
It's a grudge seething match between Tom and I.
Yes, it's the Ollie Morris Cup, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, what do you want to punt on it?
A bottle of Pinot Noir.
Oh, Pinot Noir.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I don't drink that, but that's fine.
Standard
I'll have some rosé, thanks.
Okay, fine.
So the Swans and Melbourne on Thursday night for the Jared Healy Cup.
Oh, yeah, traditional.
Yes.
Yeah. Melbourne. Mm. I can't believe I'm tipping Melbourne in Sydney, but I am.
It'd be a great win.
I don't rate either. In fact, no Tom McDonald. No, I'm changing my tip,
okay,
Sydney.
Swans.
Not that Tom McDonald's exactly been, you know, Doug Wade recently, but it's
he was my Coleman prediction, and he might kick one goal this year because
reverse
he might
Coleman
go down back.
Yeah.
How embarrassing.
It was a mistake that you tipped him to win the Coleman.
Thank you.
I tipped him to win the Coleman at the time.
I thought it was a mistake as well.
No, I'm going with the Swans though.
Yeah, I'm going with the Swans
only
as well.
Just I reckon it's going to be an ugly match up there. That the turf, disgusting.
Yeah,
I mean, what will be more disgusting is if someone goes down injured.
I'd also like to apologise to all Melbourne Victory fans last night.
Yes, you wanted to bring it.
I called Terry Antonis Tony Antonis. Hot on the couch.
When did you realise you were wrong?
Immediately after, when I got a text from my friend. And I know Terry Antonis. I've seen him play live. Like I know that. So I apologise to all of the round ball code.
Tony Antonis would be a funny name, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit like a Lira Lira. It's a bit too all similar.
Name.
It is. So I apologise to Victory Faithful.
I'm sure they'll accept your apology, Thomas. Collingwood and the Bulldogs on Friday night for the Tom Young Cup.
Who's that?
Remember Tom Young, sort of the buzz cut redhead kind of defender?
Sean Young, I remember.
Oh, yes.
Played a test.
Brad Young, left-hand yeah. Orthodox.
Who's playing?
A Collingwood Western Bulldogs.
Oh, Collingwood. Sarah?
Yeah, definitely the Magpies.
Geelong and GWS Giants for the Josh Hunt Cup.
This is a really interesting game.
And it is, and at GMHBA.
Who was it saying last night that it will define where the Giants are at? They have played poorly in finals. They have played poorly in Geelong over the journey.
Not the only team to do that.
Yeah, not the only team. But if they can win this, then they are genuine contenders. In saying that, I'm going for Geelong because I think Geelong, in my power rankings, are slightly ahead of the Giants at the moment.
Geelong won't lose a game down there this season.
Big call
from
you.
They look that good. Well, they rarely lose games down there, but I don't reckon they'll be beaten down there.
Yeah, it's a fortress. It's what an advantage it is to have your own ground.
Mm.
Like, if you can do it, what an amazing facility you can create.
The Cats have done a fantastic, ever since 2000, since Docklands Stadium came in, they've really owned that ground down there and done some great things with the venue. Essendon and Brisbane for the Damien Cupid
Cup.
This will be at the MCG. The Lions.
Jeez, it's not an easy one, is it? I think...
Come on,
no,
Tom.
I think the Lions are due for a loss. I'm going for Essendon. I don't think the Lions can be 4-0, and winning at the MCG is a tall task. Essendon had their tail up. I'm going for the Bombers.
Is this a directive from the Lions just to keep the lid on? Because every single word about the Lions is keep the lid on.
It is, but I just think sometimes when you're due, you're due. And I still think the Lions can win 12, 13, 14 games, but I don't think they'll win this one, Sarah.
No, I think Essendon will have their tails too far up.
Oh, you
and
think
it's going to backfire. Yeah, I think the Lions will get up.
Okay.
Port Adelaide and Richmond for the Andrew Moore Cup.
A good, loyal man and former trainer at Body Fit Training South Yarra.
Oh, God.
Port Adelaide and Richmond. Where is it, Ben? I need a venue, please.
At Adelaide Oval.
Okay, but when he says Port Adelaide, it means
yeah,
Adelaide
sometimes.
It's not quite at Alberton.
No, but there has been mistakes in the past regard.
Yeah.
No, Port Adelaide, yeah.
The power of the Tigers.
The Tigers just have no guns anymore.
There's too many injuries there.
Yeah. All their guns are out.
And the Power, on a separate note, are performing extremely well.
Sharp.
How good was Connor Rosie on the weekend?
Oh, yeah, really good.
5 goals, 21 touches.
Those four debutants they had in round one, that's, well under the Power for, totally flipping on their recruiting theory within 12 months and playing the kids, and it's paying dividends.
It was either going to be desperate from Ken Hinckley or it was going to be revolutionary and genius. And at the moment, it's looking more towards the latter. There's a long time to go. But David King said he's under the most pressure at the start of the year.
Yes, he did say
and that. He's responding to that perfectly at the moment.
That was on Fox Footy Facebook's brunch wrap.
Yeah, it was.
What's happened to the brunch wrap, Tom?
Waiting for Milan to get back from his escapades in Thailand.
Your sleep-ins at the moment.
Sleep-ins till 7:20, yes.
North Melbourne and Adelaide for the Brad Moran Cup.
That's a great, great call.
This is a tough one.
No, it's not. Adelaide win. How are you going to tip North?
Because I feel like they're going to have to bounce back at some point in time. I'm going to go North.
Do you have a bet on this one as well?
No. Sorry.
West Coast and Fremantle for the Daniel Metropolis Derby Cup.
West Coast will get 100% of the votes, but it's like when two Spanish tennis players play against each other in the French Open or two English players play against each other at Wimbledon. It's actually a lot closer than what the odds or what logic would suggest.
Who are the Spanish players you've got in mind there?
Rafael Nadal and Fernando Verdasco?
Yeah, or Juan Carlos something.
David Ferrer,
for example.
Yes.
But you know what I'm saying? When countrymen or countrywomen play against each other, it's a whole different kettle of fish.
Mm.
Just like derbies and showdowns.
Mm.
I still think West Coast will win, but I don't think Freo will be blown off the park.
No, I think West Coast will smack them.
Okay.
Yep, see ya.
Gold Coast and Carlton. Gold Coast and Carlton for the Daniel Gorringe Cup.
Gold Coast.
Gold Coast over the Blues.
Yeah, I'm going for the Suns as well.
Just how nice has this Gold Coast start been? They've been playing well, but geez, it's been a cushion, hasn't it, for them?
They were owed this kind of fixture, though, after the debacle last year where they were just travelling 24/7.
Mm. Yeah. The AFL can't afford to have people talking about whether Gold Coast will fold after a month, and this certainly helps.
For what it's worth, I reckon the Blues will win. Just throwing a
Metricon
out there. Yeah, I think the Blues will win.
They beat them last year, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. No, I think the Blues will win. And St Kilda and Hawthorn wrapping up the round for the Peter Spider Everett Cup.
They're actually playing for a legitimate cup.
They are.
The Silk Miller Medal here, aren't they? The Silk Miller Trophy. Hawthorn.
Raising funds beyond the Blue Ribbon Cup.
Blue Ribbon Cup, yep. I'm going for Hawthorn, but again, I'm not doing it with a lot of confidence because I think the Saints are just showing something. With Jack Stephen back in the midfield this week, which we expect, they're still a reasonable side when their pressure game is high.
Yeah, St Kilda will probably hang in there for three quarters, but I think Hawthorn will just be too good.
How about the way the Hawks started against North and then they just thought, oh, we'll flick a switch and it all changed. They're an amazing football club. Yeah, I know we spoke about it with Chief. Quite incredible. And they never cease to amaze me, Ben.
How about the Chad?
Yeah, Chad looks sharp.
Yeah.
Josh Gablich was a big fan of Chad in the Hawthorn jumper. That's one of our colleagues. He reckons he looks even better, very marketable in that jumper.
Yeah, I never, ever questioned Gabbo about his fashion sense.
No, definitely not as well. Good work from you, Sarah, filling in for Maxi today.
When's Max back?
Maxi is back next week. He's coming back on Sunday. His first shift back in the office is on Sunday.
Is he going to walk straight back in, or has Sarah done enough?
So the match committee will have to determine.
Max can take his spot back. That's fine. He loves
Sarah. Is a loyal listener of the podcast as well.
I am. I like to go on the stairs at the gym and listen
to
you guys.
What are the stairs?
You know, the stair machine.
No, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, really?
It's quite
being
good
the gym aficionado that you are.
If I want to walk upstairs, I walk upstairs, not take stairs in the gym or run up Anderson Street Hill. Anyway.
That was Tom's take for round four in the
AFL. Too much incline.
And that was the Fox Footy podcast. Keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.